Welcome to the Tiger Performance Podcast, where we feature high-achieving entrepreneurs and coaches and share their performance journeys. Now, let's get started with the show.
Steve Adams here, founder and CEO of Tiger Performance Institute and Tiger Medical Institute. I'm the host of the Tiger Performance Podcast, where I talk with entrepreneurs, executives, professionals, and more about their performance and career journeys. We've had genetics experts, Super Bowl athletes, game-changing health professionals, executives, and amazing entrepreneurs with stories that will inspire you. Okay, let's acknowledge our sponsor for today's episode, and that is the Tiger Performance and Tiger Medical Institutes. Our focus is on the mid-career high achiever who at the time they should be their best are starting to wear down from the pressure, stress, and sleepless nights, and perhaps even burnout. Tiger's unique Decode 2.0 system helps successful leaders reset and reclaim their health futures and potential longevity without the time-consuming and confusing fads or biohacks using our proven and proprietary Tiger Flow Decode 2.0 system. The Tiger Decode 2.0 system is a hyper-personalized DNA-based approach to human optimization. Through the combination of doctor care and health coaching, we help successful people all over the world reach a peak state of health today while enabling them to sustain elite performance and health tomorrow, expanding their impact, extending their careers. I know personally, as an entrepreneur who built a $100 million company, I burned out, nearly ruining my health. So I created the solution I wish I had. The solution is the Tiger Decode 2.0 system, a proven program that is transforming lives today and creating better tomorrows. So what are you waiting for? Visit tigerpi.com today to learn more. Okay, I'm excited to share with you today our guest who is going to help you gain some new insights and new knowledge about how to enter into a peak performance state when you have that big moment that you need to shine. My guest today is Dr. Greg Czar, PhD, who is a grounded theory psychological researcher, wrestling coach, and mental toughness coach. Dr. Greg is also a professor at Schoolcraft College in Livonia, Michigan, and he researches a new theory of building your cage as a process of competing preparation that involves developing focus, tactics, and visualization. The premise is to provide culture conducive of developing such techniques to create an individual process of mental and physical preparation. Dr. Greg, I'm excited to have you on today. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Excited about sharing a lot of what I think is breakthrough kind of material, looking at the options of focus and participation in athletic and life events. My research is rooted in sports, but the applications to real life are unprecedented.
That's great. I'm excited. And you know, one of the things I like to do, Greg, when we start out each podcast, is just kind of warm it up a little bit by asking a couple of fun questions. And so the first one I want to ask you, Greg, Dr. Greg, is where are you from and what was it like growing up in your household with your parents and sisters, brothers, whatever you had?
Okay. And actually that's a great place to start, because I think in looking back over my lifetime, I think that's where this research began.
That's great.
I grew up in the Detroit metro area. I was born in 1961, so that gives you a time frame of era. Mm-hmm. But growing up was a toxic environment. Mm. Looking back, I had to deal with growing up. I had a borderline and narcissist parental combination, which any research you look into is not a prime combination for child rearing. I think one notable psychologist refers to it as a hostage situation. Yeah, but you know, it sets the bar,
right?
You know, it's like, you know, I was talking to a friend just the other day. We were talking about how they couldn't understand how someone else could think that way. And I looked at them and I said, of course you can't, you know, you haven't walked their path. I mean, right, their perception of their reality. I mean, for example, I used my childhood growing up in that environment. Mm-hmm. My normal is so much different than 9 out of 10 people that you'll encounter. But I think it is that environment which really helped develop my not only curiosity, but, you know, just wanting to understand that environment.
Mm-hmm. And why people do what they do, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great. And do you see it as connected to what you do now in the sense that curiosity caused you to keep growing? And I mean, at a relatively later point in life, you got your PhD and did this research. Do you think that you know, those early years in the 60s and 70s in Detroit were formative for you in that regard?
Oh, you know, absolutely. It's funny. If you look at it going forward, it's a meandering path. Mm-hmm. You know, we look at where we're headed, where we end up, and we wander around quite a bit. We don't go from point A to B. But when you have the ability of a rear view mirror and you can look back at this, you can draw direct lines back to specific milestones within your lifetime. And it all leads back to specific points, because that's how we adjust our lens, our perspective on, you know, our reality. Because our reality is our reality. And that's something a lot of people don't comprehend. You know, I often ask my first year students, when you think of terms of reality with what you bring in from your environment with your senses, you know, your sight, smell, taste, touch, you know, go through all five of them. What you bring in from your environment, what you perceive as reality, if you were to apply a percentage to that, what would you guess at? And most of my students and most of the people that I pose that question will say anywhere from 60 to 100%. Right? Because it's unfiltered. It comes from our environment. This is what we're picking up. But in reality, 10% of that data is actually used. The other 80 to 90% is perceived in the mind.
Wow. That's really interesting. You know, I just had a thought. My dad, back in the early 80s, this was after being at General Motors for 20 years, he really sold out and worked hard to try to move up in that organization. And there was a key moment in the early 80s where he had done some really good work on the Fiero project, which is a car that was a concept car for General Motors then.
Absolutely. And I remember that.
Yeah, I remember driving around in Lansing, where I grew up, and people looking at us funny because we were driving a prototype car. And he...
Plastic, wasn't it?
It's called Rim Technology.
Non-denting.
He was the one that set up the whole process at GM in Lansing to make the skin for that car. And so it was a really interesting process to watch him go through. And then when this big promotion came, they gave it to a guy who was probably 15 years younger, who went to GMI, the General Motors Institute. And I watched that kind of devastate him. And I thought, you know, I can't really trust big companies. And that was part of the reason why I ended up leaving banking to start my own company, because I just didn't want to be, you know, 50 and have that happen to me either. So
gets cycled out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, that's great. You know, so go ahead.
That's a common tale in, you know, in the auto industry. A lot of people don't understand. And I could change specific variables in that story. And, you know, my dad had the same one, and it was a different culture, the car culture. I mean, there's a culture to study, the car culture of the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, in the Detroit area. My dad was actually put in charge of the K car.
Yep. I remember that for Chrysler.
The launch that saved Chrysler's. And it's, you know, a lot of the same parallels when you're telling that story, I can totally relate to it. And sure enough, you know, when everything was said and done, the heavy lifting was done. Someone else slid in with a college education and boom, next thing you know, my dad was working per diem out in Italy, you know, and he's like, what the heck just happened? You know?
Well, and I was just building on your idea of, you know, your upbringing led you to where you are today. And I think a lot of us could probably find that in the root of their story. So,
oh, absolutely. I mean, it adjusts our lens that 80% we perceive of our reality. Every time we experience something like that, it tilts that lens. It, you know, concaves or convexes a little more, but it adjusts and that becomes our reality. So that's all a part of, you know, the formulating our vision.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm going to go off script here a little bit because I usually ask the same questions of most of our podcast visitors, but
my wife will attest I'm pretty good
at filling
space with talking.
That's great.
One of my superpowers.
The question I have for you then is if that's 80%, you know, in your view, Greg, how do people gain self-awareness to understand that so that as they're forming their vision for their life, they're making a good decision and they're not allowing their, you know, early years to overly influence their future?
Well, you know, and you hit the key word there, self-awareness. That, you know, that's something that we, it's human nature for us to avoid that.
Yeah,
it really is. You know, we skip over that and it's almost like if we don't look at it, we don't make eye contact with it, it's not going to happen. I'm going to just slide through and what happens, happens. It's a not missed opportunity in my eyes. I often use the analogy of, you know, being a victim in a parking lot, you know, and I don't need to stigmatize that, but in any way, but you know, someone walking through a parking lot, not paying attention on their phone, fumbling with their keys, going through this, going through that, and they don't see the person that's walking up upon them. It's kind of like the same thing with our awareness with our life. If we go through just, you know, looking at things, the superficial things around us and our distractions, instead of what's actually happening, you know, I just talked to a client the other day and we were talking about, when you're angry. And we use the example, we're talking the example of someone cut you off in traffic. And for that instant, you're like, oh my God. And then you got to take that moment and stop and say, wait a minute, why am I angry? Because someone's 10 seconds ahead of me.
Yeah. Right.
What exactly is the dynamics here? And there's a quick thing where you can just focus and, you know, you can pick out three things in your environment. And you want to kind of clap your hands and bring your conscious, your unconscious, and your subconscious all together on the same page and pick out three things, 3x30 method. You pick out, there's a sign, there's a sign, there's a sign, take a couple breaths, there's a light, there's a light, there's a light. Don't add any value to it. Pick out three things, just breathe. And what it does is collectively brings everybody together, being the conscious, subconscious, and unconscious. And you're like, wait a minute, why am I angry?
Right.
And then take that awareness and just like, okay, there's no reason for me to be angry, you know, and all of a sudden you're no longer angry. But the important thing is we need to do that in the good times. Those are the key ones that we miss. I use this example, when I finally got through my doctoral process, went into my living room, turned on my stereo system, plugged in my favorite playlist, put on a song, and I just cranked it. And I sat there for a moment and just absorbed what it felt like, what it smelt like, what it tasted like. I built that awareness to that moment. What that does, that creates anchors.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? When you have those anchors in your mind, you crave them.
Right.
You know, people talk about a crave case at White Castle. No, you get those types of emotions going, those types of memories going, and it's like, I want to feel that again.
Right.
Yeah. I want to do that again. But we don't do that enough with the good things. We always focus on the bad things. Why am I angry? You know, after a loss, athletes, you know, I shouldn't be feeling this. I shouldn't be feeling that. I shouldn't be feeling. But you know what? When you win, you need to take that time, take that breath and say, all right, what's this moment all about?
Right. And so that you can go access it later.
Yeah. Because you want those anchors. You want to be able to wear that, you know, it's like walking in, in growing up in Michigan in the winter, you want to get that path in the snow. You know, the first time you walk through, it's kind of trepidatious. You don't know where you're going. But once you get that path worn in, you're drinking your coffee, talking on the phone, and you're walking along on the same path because it's worn in the snow. You know where you're going. It's kind of like those types of behaviors that help mold our perception of what our reality is, adjust that lens.
Yep, that's great. Form those neural pathways. So, real quick, his reference to White Castle is a Michigan cultural reference. There's White Castle hamburgers in the mainly the Detroit area that are really tasty and they're really bad for you. But it's kind of a cultural thing in Michigan. And I just thought I'd educate the audience on that. That was kind of funny when you said that.
And they had a Crave case. That's what drew me. There was a case called the Crave case. When you crave a crave one of their products, that you got to get a case.
Yep, that's right. So, Dr. Greg, paint a picture, you know, for our listeners about your work overall, so we can kind of get context. Because I want to go a little bit deeper with the next few, three questions, and to do that, just kind of give us context about your work overall.
You know, I guess I could circle back to what we were talking about earlier, looking back in retrospect, what got me to where I am now. When I look at the direct lines, I was a competitive athlete. You know, I competed at some of the highest levels back in my day. And a lot of what I did, I knew in the end was based on mental preparation, but I didn't understand how I got there. And it's something that I remember always, it intrigued me to the point where I would always try to break it down of how I got there and how I got myself to that level of performance, because it was, it definitely altered my behavior, altered my performance, and eventually, you know, change the trajectory of what I was doing in sports. But I didn't understand it. I went through much like a lot of people my age, I went through and I did what I would thought I was supposed to be doing. I went the business, you know, route. But I remember early on, one of the first classes I had to take at the local community college, I took a three-pronged course. It was ethics, philosophy, and psychology. And I remember taking a psychology course and was just like, whoa, really? And it was like a milestone that clicked but didn't. And I went on, completed my business degree at the time, went through my business career. All the time kind of looking in rearview mirror, thinking of that course. And when I had the opportunity to retool, I knew my direction by then. It was like, I really wanted to follow that lead. And it brought me on a course of, you know, I started off with my bachelor's, my master's, and ultimately my PhD, but it really circled me back to that, that process of mental preparation. And it was like, how did I do that? How did I do that? And more importantly, how could I teach that to somebody? Because in the meantime, once I started retooling, one of the things I did is I stepped back into the sports field and got back in, I got into coaching for the first time in wrestling. And it was, to me, it was a great opportunity to teach that mental edge. To say, you don't need to look at this. Focus on this. If you focus on this, that doesn't matter. So it kind of came full circle with the application. And what's great about it is if you can master these techniques, and these techniques are provable with a theory, which is what I've developed with my theory of preparation. If you can do this in that toxic environment, why can't you do it in the business world? Why can't you do it in your academic world? Why can't you do it in your personal realms? You can. It's the same process.
Yes, I agree. I wrote a book last year, published early this year, called Unleash the Peak Performer Within You. And the big premise behind it was that, you know, we're in a time of epic change, of exponentially accelerating technological change. And the old ways of performing, having a linear approach to an exponential problem isn't going to work. And linear is work harder, longer, faster. And, right. And so the book's about working in a flow state. And, you know, to do that, though, there's kind of the literature suggests there's a three-legged stool to that. One, you have to optimize your physiology. And so my Tiger Medical and Tiger Performance is really built around that. Our whole focus is on getting you in a physiological state that you can perform at a high level consistently. Cause if you don't have the gas in the engine, you can't do it. Okay. No matter how good your mindset is. But the other side though, is there is this optimization of how you think, how you prepare. And that's really your work. That's your expertise and specialty. That's why I love having you on the show today. And the third area is just optimizing your environment and the way you work so that you can, get yourself into that peak performing state. And so I really love that. So based on your research, Dr. Greg, how can we control when we're going into, a key performance moment, how do we control our anxiety, our attention, and our thinking, our thoughts, so that we can perform well?
Build your cage.
I love it. Unpack that. What does that mean for the average listener that's maybe not a wrestler right now, but they got a business?
No, and it's funny because it actually goes back to one of my dogs.
Okay.
kind of made me see it in such a way that I think was a way to illustrate it, get the point across, because in when it comes, push comes to shove, that's what you want. You want to be able to apply what you're trying to tell somebody.
Right. Yep.
And I think the metaphor that build your cage is, if anybody that's ever had a dog, that's probably a broader spectrum than those that have wrestled. So we've already expanded our audience.
There you go. Great.
But I was looking at, I had an Australian cattle dog, which are tenacious at best. Loved her crate.
Mm-hmm.
Doors open. All around behind her are bars, and all she has to do is focus on that opening. Well, it's real similar to that, because I know that she was happy in her until I went to close that door. Then her temperament completely changed. Mm-hmm. But anything that happened behind her, around her, was irrelevant. All that mattered was that opening. So why not take our attention and do the same thing? We often... the biggest thing about focus is to eliminate distractions.
Right. And say that again. That's a good quote.
The best way to eliminate...
the best way to focus is to eliminate distractions.
Yeah, the best way to focus is to eliminate distractions. And what I mean is like we focus... and I use this example. I'll go back to my sports. You're going to a big, and I'll use wrestling as an example since it's a sport I'm familiar with, but anybody that's ever been to a sporting event can relate. You're going into a huge room with hundreds, maybe thousands of people in there. Everybody's cheering. Some are booing. There's all kinds of things to look at. When in reality, the only thing you really need to be in control of is that opponent across the court, across the mat, across the floor, across the diamond, across the field, across the gridiron, across the ice, across the corporate table. These are all, that's all your focus needs to be on. All the other stuff is superficial. And yeah, you can come back and revisit it, but your task at hand is your opponent, your obstacle, your challenge, whatever your focus needs to be on, because we are so easily distracted. It's like, don't look and see where your mom's sitting.
Right, right. Or check your phone.
The only thing you should be focused on is that opponent, the opening of your cage, And the only thing that they serve is they are in your way.
You know, Dr. Greg, when I was coaching basketball, we were able to go to Michigan State University's arena 3 consecutive years for the Final Four. And, oh, wow. And for boys basketball in Michigan. And we ultimately won all 3 years. And that was a bit, you know, what you were just saying there, I'm just kind of telling a story to relate, to reinforce what you're saying. The biggest thing we would say to the guys, because these are 17 and 18 year old kids, you know, they're the most distractible human beings on the planet. And what we would try to explain to them is that everything that you're going to do on that court tomorrow or today are the same things that you've been doing since the first day of practice. And, you know, don't look up into the stands. Don't think about the fact that you're looking at a 15,000 seat arena instead of a 1500 seat gym, and just focus on the basics of what you do, passing and shooting and rebounding and playing good defense and getting back on defense and transition, and just doing those things that we did all the way every day in practice. And if you do that, and you just take, you know, one play at a time, the details will take care of themselves. And they did, because it's really a big adjustment for a kid, you know, who goes from playing in a high school gym to playing in a Big Ten arena with all the pressure of the state finals.
And to apply building a cage in that experience.
Yep.
You're playing in front of an empty gym. Keep your head on the court.
Right. Exactly.
Because that's where your game's at.
Yep. So let's extend this. So, you know, you've got key lessons from your dissertation that I read part of it. I didn't read all of it. But from your research, you know, on what you learned on how elite wrestlers prepare themselves, translate that now to the executive or the dentist that goes in for a big operation, or an entrepreneur who's got to make a big presentation on a stage to make payroll next week, you know, that kind of thing.
You know, one of the biggest things that I've been a huge proponent of, and this goes back to even my early teaching, online, I was, a hands-on, online instructor for a long time, teaching mm-hmm. people theory, is to wear the hat, embody the role. It's huge. It's a huge part of the preparatory process. Mm-hmm. You know, you take my the visual matrix of my my theory, and you change the variables, and it's the same process. If you focus on that role as that corporate executive, that speaker, mm-hmm. Whatever obstacle, whatever challenge you are designed. Or you are trying to design your process to overcome and ultimately succeed at. Mm-hmm. In order to do that, embody the role. If you're going to be a speaker, put on that hat and be the best speaker you can be. Mm-hmm. Become that. You know, you're no longer so and so's husband, so and so's spouse. You're not so and so's son, daughter, uncle, brother. You become that role. And that's a huge part of it, because once you do that, it's like, all right, how do I make sure that I'm in a position to succeed at this? Well, with my theory, there's really just 4 legs. I mean, it's like your basic table. Mm-hmm. Development, application, assessment, and support. I mean, it's really sounds basic, but we step away from those simple functions. And when we apply those or have them applied to us, we're able to really focus in and zero that process down. And as we zero that preparatory process down, mm-hmm. that's where we get our focus, because we realize we're only processing, preparing for this narrow field of attack. Mm-hmm. And from a tactical situation, it's the opening of your cage. You develop that focus along the way, and that assessment can come from within. It can come from external sources. Same thing mm-hmm. with support. Support could come from not only yourself saying I can do this, but also those around you. You know, you get the support of your team, and team is a huge thing. whether you're a team sport player or not, team is a huge thing. And, you know, I've always, one of my sayings, once you're a teammate, you're always a teammate. And that you're wearing my colors from that point forward, no matter if we're on the same team or not. So all of that really plays into getting those components all together. And as we narrow our process to prepare, we also narrow that focus and in turn improve our performance and our tactical approach to it.
Dr. Greg, where does visualization come in when you talk about embodying the role, wearing the hat? Can visualization help that? Because I know I've used that successfully in the past.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's huge. Mm-hmm. And the best thing to do is when you're using visualization, remember that, think of films.
Yep.
Don't use a rough cut piece of film that was dug out of 1890 that's flickering and you can barely see. You want the latest CG stuff coming at you, 3D sound. You want everything in that visualization. You want it to be dynamic. You want it to be impactful.
All the senses, in other words.
Yeah, you want to get all the players on board, you know, all the senses. What does this feel like? What does it smell like? What does it taste like?
Yep.
You want to bring all that in because that develops anchors. And what happens is the aforementioned path in the snow, it builds that path in the snow. If you see yourself succeeding 1,000 times, what's going to be the possibility of you succeeding that 1,001th time in real time?
It's high. And then the research has shown that people that visualize actually will perform better in tests compared to non-visualizing people. And I know for me, like our company, we run something called EOS, Entrepreneur Operating System. And it's a great system for, getting traction in a business. And I do a lot of dry sauna time. My doctor has me on that because it's great for cardiovascular risk reduction and disease risk reduction. And I try to literally visualize our drivers every day that I'm in there of how we're building our company. And so when I get out of there every day and I'm actually doing it, it's like I've already done this before.
Absolutely. You know, I'll circle back to athletics. You know, you said you were from a basketball background.
I played football in college, but I played basketball also. Yeah, both.
Well, I was going to use the example of you see yourself. I don't know if it worked for Shaq, but or not. Yeah. But you see yourself standing on the line and putting that free throw through millions of times. You're not only going to build the neural pathways, but your muscles are going to expect to do it the same way, because if your mechanics are right in the visualization and that's accurate, guess what? That's the only way. If you do anything other than that, it's not going to feel right.
That's right. Oh, you're right. I learned that in high school from a coach from UCLA about visualizing that kind of thing. So that's good stuff.
And take that now and add that to what we've learned about 80 to 90% of our reality is perceived in our mind. Mm. Look at the control we have.
Right. Yep. That's powerful. Well, Dr. Greg, how can coaches and leaders create a culture where they can unlock this type of performance in their teams?
You know, it goes back to, providing those four legs. You know, we need to have an environment that fosters development, builds mental toughness, teaches what sacrifice. You know, here's a big part that we miss. We talk about development. One of the things that in my theory that supports development is mental toughness, learning what sacrifice means, developing a higher determination and resilience rates. When we have those types of things working in our favor, our performance is up. You know, if we keep the bar set low on mental toughness, sacrifice, determination, resilience, then the smallest things are gonna make you crack. So we need to make sure that we support that. application and direction, you know. We need to work on techniques like we talked about here, visualization, self-talk, positive self-talk.
Yep.
You know, it's you know, I think back, self-talk is so important because it's the first voice we hear.
Right.
You know, I had one of my very first coaching experiences. I had a little girl, like, she came up to like my kneecap, stressed out. she was on deck, and she come up to me. She says, Coach Greg, she goes, I don't know if I can do this. I got butterflies in my stomach. And I looked at her and I says, you know, Haley, I go, those butterflies in your stomach, is your body telling you it's game time.
Right.
And she was like, just looked at me bewildered for a second. She's like, oh, okay. And she went out there and clobbered the ball.
I love it.
But that first voice is so important because think about it. In the wrong situation, walks up, Coach, I got these butterflies in my stomach. What if my first reaction would have been, oh, you know, she would have already associated those butterflies with negative energy. But right. By me, I mean, instantly saying, oh, that's your body telling you it's game time. She's never had that. Oh, what is this? So that's the big part of it. The energy around us is a huge part of it. So we build that environment of application and direction is great. And one thing that a lot of employers miss out on and teams miss out on are assessment. You know, in right. order to have focus, we need to have to build confidence and reduce doubt. We need to have accurate assessment, routine assessment, because someone may think they're doing a great job and not, or someone may think they're doing a bad job and are doing fantastic. So you need to clear that area up when we talk about assessment so they can stay yep. focused, because if they're worried about, am I doing a good job? Am I not doing a good job? I haven't heard anything back. Assessment, letting them know where they stand is a huge part. And of course, I think it goes without saying, but support, you know, and the fact of, you know, coaching them along, training, applying training, making training mandatory, you know, just drive them, because it's human nature not to want to step out of your comfort zone. But if you make training mandatory,
right,
and really push them into it, you know, the hardest part is starting. Once they start, they become addicted. And I found that over and over with teams. They sometimes that support just needs a nudge. And once they get going, it's like, yeah, they can't get enough of that training. So all of those, you know, pretty much along with the, development of, the duration of building experience along the way really allows that employee, that athlete, that person in life, the ability to really not only focus their preparatory process for whatever they're going to focus on, but just makes them better at it. And I think it's just a great way to, if I'm doing this, put on the hat. If I'm doing that, put on the hat.
Yep.
And it's the first step of building that cage, because if you put on that hat, you've eliminated all the other roles. So right now you're down to one cage. Now let's reinforce things.
So a leader, really, they need to build cages, help build cages for all their people of focus, and use those four drivers, which was development, application, assessment, and support. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you written a book on this yet?
Well, I've written a research project. I have a couple ideas going on where I really want to develop this, because I think it, much rooted in my background. I think that's why it was so fascinating to study wrestlers, and anybody that's been around the sport knows what a toxic environment a wrestling room can be.
Yeah.
I've
been around them.
Yep. You come out of that environment and your 80%'s changed.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, finish. Go ahead.
No, as I say, and when with that change become, you know, you reinforce those legs, you become better at preparing. It's like, right. You know, I remember being the classic. If I had to go in front of a group and talk, I'd get the crackling voice, the sweats, my palms I'd be a wreck. But I learned to focus on what I needed to do. And, you know, the three talks, what, the one you gave, the one you should have given, and the one you wanted to give. The more I worked at it, they all became the same talk. So as I developed that skill, that was the opening of my cage. It didn't matter if I was talking in front of, you know, five people or 5,000. It was the same talk. And that's what my focus needed to be on. Not how many people were in the room.
Right. Yep. Well, I think you should write a book, and you might call it Build Your Cage, and, you know, you unpack that framework of the four things, and you got your book, because I think you've got something here that could be additive and helpful to leaders as they build organizations.
It's, you know, it's one of those things that's so simple, we overlook it.
Right. Well, you've already got all your research done. You know, you just literally have to sit and write it.
So. Well, what I'd like to do is, you know, I mentioned that wrestling was a toxic environment. There's a couple of dynamics I'd like to switch up on. I would like to maybe find a way to redo this research process in a team environment.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that's really kind of intriguing to me is either golf or baseball. With that, what I really want to target is that dynamic for performance with calm focus.
Yeah,
you know, right. And I'm not so much talking about working in the field, but as far as that one-on-one batting experience with hitters, and that, you know, me and the ball out in the course. That's a dynamic that to see if these type of fundamentals hold true for those changes in variables. And if they do, it just reinforces the whole theory.
Yeah. I'd encourage you with baseball to do pitchers, because as a father of a college baseball player who was a pitcher, that is one of the most psychologically demanding roles in sport. Because
I have to next agree pitch. With you on that one. That would probably be the way to go, is to go to pitchers, because and a lot of times they're being directed by another player, the catcher. The catcher's, you know, sending signals into them what they have to do, and they have to hit their marks.
Right. Yeah. And it's that overcoming of the failure, you know, because every ball is a failure, a mini failure. Yeah.
Or success.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So this is a fun question. I ask this of everybody at the end, and it's not about regrets. It's just like if you had a second parallel life and you could do something fun, what would it be? You know, like I tell people all the time, I'd love to be a Division I men's basketball coach or a CIA field operative. Probably not, because as soon as somebody shot at me, I'd be in trouble. But, you know, do you have anything like that, Dr. Greg?
I guess the closest thing, the two things that stand out to me when that question's posed to me is, number one, I would love to go back to the point when I was competing to know just a fraction of what I know now about that process, because at the time, like I said, it was hit or run, and I was hit or miss. It was just a blind thing. But to understand what I understand now and go back then, absolutely. And then again, the biggest thing I can think of is, instead of retooling, one of my biggest regrets is that I didn't tool like that the first time and follow my instincts. And I tell my students, I tell my athletes and any of the clients I talk to, listen to that voice, because that voice told me back then.
Yep.
This is something I should be looking at. But you know what? We get too wrapped up on what others think we should be doing, what we think the expectations around us think we should be doing. And there's all kinds of other factors that we focus on and take us out of our cage, where if we just sat back, did that little bit of awareness, did that little bit of visualization, did that little bit of self-talk, it would be like plain as the nose on our face. This is what we should be doing. And if I would have just taken those few steps back then, who knows? I can't regret it, because I'm the product of that path.
Right.
And it brought me to this point, but it would be interesting to see if I could start off earlier, following the path that I should have followed.
Sure.
In retrospect.
Well, Greg, thank you. We've been talking with Dr. Greg Czar. And Dr. Greg, where can people find you if they want to know more about your work and the work you do? Do you have a website? Do you have a social media presence?
Actually, right now we're in the process. I do have an email and a domain up and running. The website's in the process.
What's your website?
MindZar.
Yep.
.com. And that's MIND. And then my last name, C like cat, Z like zebra, AR, .com. And I email is drzar@mindzar.com.
Great. And our company that does my post-production will make sure that's all in there clear for everyone. So Dr. Greg, thank you. You've been very interesting, informative, and I think people listening today will have a new model that they can apply in peak performance. So thank you.
Build your cage.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Tiger Performance Podcast. We'll see you again next time, and be sure to click subscribe to get the future episodes.